Okay, well, it's 10:30 and we actually have a good amount of people here. So we're really excited to have you here. So I'll do a little introduction, and there's two of us here from Wildfire Partners. So to let you know what's going on. And there we go. Hopefully we all see who's here. So welcome to everyone. My name's Leslie Broadhead. I'm the program specialist with Wildfire Partners. And I do need to monitor one thing, guys. So I'm gonna just do, whoops, sorry about that. Just make sure nobody else is joining us. I'm the program specialist with Wildfire Partners. And so for those of you who are, is everybody here in the program? Just raise your hand, like, yeah. Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, so I'm the person on the other end of the phone, like if you all call or if you email us, that's me responding. So I'm kind of our outreach person. And I have with me today one of our mitigation specialists who actually does the assessments, and that's Abby Silver. So Abby, you wanna do a quick hello?
Yeah, hi everybody. I may have met some of you. I've been working for Wildfire Partners for 6 years, and I work still for Wildfire Partners, and I'm also working at Boulder County doing the building permit related wildfire mitigation right now as well.
So I just want to kind of go over a couple of things of how we're going to do this. So this is an hour long today. If for some reason we don't get to someone's question, we absolutely want to get to your question. So if we don't, we will just follow up with you one-on-one by phone. I am working all day today, so I can actually follow up with you right after our chat or this afternoon or whenever a time is good for you. So I just want to throw that out there. So, and if you hover over your screen, like I said, you'll notice there's kind of a toolbar at the bottom there. So again, the mute button, if you just want to listen in when you're not actually speaking, that's great. That's in the lower left-hand corner. So you just click it and then you'll see there's like a little red microphone with a slash through it. And that means you can't be heard, but you can still listen, okay? So if you, again, if you have distractions in your house like dogs, that might be a good idea. Now, in terms of the question asking, I had a few questions that came in by email, but you'll see in the middle of the screen at that toolbar at the bottom, it says chat. So chat is where you can ask your question. So you just are gonna hit the chat icon and you'll say, you know, I have a question about whatever. And you don't have to be super specific because we're just gonna use that to moderate and let you ask your question just the way you want it. So, but that way we can keep it moving and we won't have people talking over each other. So go ahead and, so everybody, I'm gonna type in something right now. I have a question about, and see if you can see this question in your chat bar. Does everybody see that?
Yep.
Yep. Okay. So yeah, so that's how we're going to go ahead and moderate the questions. And since there's so much, we weren't sure how many people were going to show up today. So since we do have a good amount of people, I'll go ahead and open it up for questions, and I'll probably jump in periodically to ask these couple of questions we got by email. I don't see those people with us yet. So does anybody, oh, I see somebody asked something here. Leary. Let's see. Wait a second. I'm just going down here. All right. Leary, yeah, it looks like you have the first question. So you want to go ahead with that and just sure you... Yeah, unmute. Oh, you got your microphone ready to go. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah. We like lilacs growing up in northern Minnesota and such. We don't have them here. They're really pretty at, you know, the nurseries and such. We're wildfire mitigated. And I know zone one is something you want to kind of keep foliage out of. But my question is, if the area where zone one is on the side of the house where we might consider putting lilacs, if there were no trees, no pine needles, no grass, just lilacs, would it be possible that they could intrude into zone one? Or is zone one like a protected, no foliage completely type of area?
So great question.
Yeah.
I I think that, you know, you hit a couple of really important points with your question. One is, so you can have some limited amount of plantings in zone one, but you want to keep them, he's still there. You want to keep them separated from the other vegetation. So what you'll want to do is make sure that you have about 10 feet between the lilacs and the side of your house and the any other like tree branches that might be nearby from coniferous trees. If you find an appropriate place, I think it's fine to plant deciduous plants like lilacs. And one final thing I'd like to say about them is as they grow, it's really nice to keep the bottom like foot or two trimmed up so that you basically have almost like a little trunk, like a little tree trunk before the foliage starts. And that'll help you be able to get in and rake out the dead leaves and anything that gets trapped underneath the plant. So does that answer your question?
He looks like he's still there.
I think he's still there. I'm not sure. Okay. I don't see his microphone muted. So.
Okay.
Having audio problems, unable to hear.
Okay, so we're going to move on to Pat, Pat, you have a question that I am sure is on everybody's mind. So this is a great question. Go ahead, Pat. Oh, you're still muted,
okay.
Pat.
My question is that my audit was put on hold for various reasons from last fall, and it was supposed to happen in April, but now we have a pandemic. When might the audit of just the property be done to even know what mitigation has to be done? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So Pat, we are taking our direction. We are part of Boulder County government. So we are actually taking our direction from of course, the director of our department, but ultimately Boulder County Public Health. So, you know, when we are able to go ahead and offer those in-person assessments again, we are going to email everybody. We are going to contact you by phone. But unfortunately, we can't give a deadline on that. But I promise that we will get the word out.
And then the other thing is that during this time, we allowed to, not that I can do it, but I allowed to have someone do any mitigation already, or should I wait?
You can. So this is a question I actually got by email people were saying, hey, are contractors still doing work? They are doing work. They are considered part of essential services. So contractors are doing forestry work. You can contact them. If you haven't had your assessment yet, then there could be a financial advantage to waiting. Because for people whose property has never been on our program before, we do have, you know, financial assistance for forestry work. So you know, it's really up to you. But given that the fire danger is low right now, I'd say maybe wait a little bit and see what happens.
I agree. That was what I had.
Great.
I'd like to add something to that too, which is that while this might not be the time to start tackling your forestry work, there's things that we can all be doing and like sort of spring cleaning style stuff where you could be raking up the dead leaves and pine needles and stuff that have blown up against the side of your house. So, you know, basically the kind of thing that you can do with those brown paper compostable bags would be the perfect type of thing to tackle at this point. And the other thing, like as the season goes on, depending how long we're all stuck inside, you know, keeping your grass mowed is another one of those things that you can start tackling on your own.
So great suggestions, Abby. Mike has a question, so we're gonna have Mike ask his question. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, my question was, we presently have cedar siding, and I was wondering, have any of your homeowners gone to stucco or metal siding for fire prevention?
Yeah, I've, I'm Some people have switched out their siding completely. It's an expensive prospect, but it's certainly well worth the investment if you can afford to do that. What I would say I've also seen people do, if they don't have like the $50,000 or whatever it might take to completely redo your siding, is they've done sort of more of a wainscoting thing where you're doing something with the bottom like 2 or 3 feet of the siding and putting a non-combustible. I've seen people do a really lovely job of that with corrugated metal. And I think, Leslie, we have something on our website. Is that right?
We do. So a couple of things, and we were actually going to discuss this at the beginning, but there were so many of you that joined us. We were so happy. But what recent fire science has shown is that protecting the exterior of your home, like where Mike is talking about in Abby, that matters as much as doing the forestry work, because most homes, like the Paradise Fire last year in California, they ignite through ember showers. And anything you can do to prevent that is going to be worth, you know, worth the effort and probably worth the money. So on our website this winter, we put up a photo gallery to give you ideas of how you can do these things, like what Abby just suggested, or like how you can do that barrier around the foundation of your house. So it's under for homeowners on the website, and it has all kinds of photos with some comments of how you can do this for your house. So, okay, so that was the last of the questions, unless somebody else has a question, and go ahead. If, for those of you who just joined us, I know some of you just joined us, we're asking you to submit your questions through the chat feature. So at the bottom of your screen, there's a toolbar, and in the middle, it says chat with a little bubble. And if you click on that, you can type in your question there. So, because right now I don't have any more questions there, but I am going to go to the questions we got by email. So we had a question from a gentleman. I don't think he's with us right now, but he had his assessment and he had a couple items on there. One was removing his junipers in zone one, and one was replacing his plexi skylight. And he wanted to know if that was required for certification. So this is a great question. So on your reports, you have a checklist and there's red boxes. Those are required. That is what is required for you to get your certificate. There will also be recommended items. Those are not required for certification. They're like, oh, this would be great to do this to take the next step, but they're not required for certification. And just a note on the junipers. So, you know, I did let him know that it was a required item for junipers. They are extremely flammable. Abby, you can speak to that too. That and so they're often required to be removed in zone one because they're kind of like the Roman candle of vegetation. So yeah. Do you have any more comments on that, Abby?
Well, since I think we only have one question, I'll tell a sort of interesting little anecdote I heard from a firefighter who was told me about being on a fire call, and he was standing in somebody's front yard, like looking at the fire line 100 feet away, and the juniper that was next to where he was standing like spontaneously combusted. So that to me was like such a, I could not, before he told me that, have imagined that would actually happen. So yeah, that's kind of why junipers are being called out in particular.
Yeah. So yeah. So that as area, as Abby was saying, the area around your house and that within that first 5 feet, that first 30 feet, that is very important. Susan has a question here. I just saw this popped up on my chat. Susan, you want to go ahead with your question? Oh, there she is.
So, hold on a second.
Oh, we can hear you now.
We're getting some reverb.
Just turn your volume down on your computer. So the sound volume, slide that down a little bit.
It's actually my husband's laptop, which is why I'm looking at him. There we go.
Go ahead.
So I came across a list of sort of these wildfire safe plants. And they tend to be plants that are, you know, more full of water, things like that. And so I wasn't sure if this was a legitimate thing. And if it is it a good option for plants that, you know, you may want to put near the house for like a flower garden, things like that?
Abby, you want to take that?
Sure. Yeah. Great question. And yes, it is a legitimate thing. And I think that the way that they sort of, some of the characteristics of those plants are that they do retain more water, that they're xeric, which means that they're able to retain the water without being watered. And they're definitely recommended if you're going to be planting in zone one, and especially close to your zone 1A, to use plants like that. I have had pretty good luck with those low growing ground covers. And the other thing, I guess, about planting is you don't want to, like, I like to sort of the idea of transitioning from lower stuff closer to the house out as you get further away, you can start getting more into your shrubs or your clumps of tall wildflowers or your bushes.
And just a word, you know, I just thought of something, because, you know, I know all of you have gone through cutting, you know, trees. What we have found with some of our folks that have been in the program now since 2014 is they're getting a lot more diversity in the vegetation once they've taken out those thick conifers, you know, that are around their house. So they're getting more wildflowers, they're getting more, different types of trees. Aspen, a lot of people find that the aspen really takes off once they, so, you know, that's another thing to be thinking about, is that by thinning out, you'll probably do better in terms of diversity of what naturally would grow. So.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then just a quick follow-up question. So planting these types of plants close to the house and then having the, you know, the, what is it, 30 feet of distance between the next, you know, between tree, the house and trees and whatnot, would that impact the recertification or not really?
So what, Susan, I just real quick, where are you in the process? Did you have an assessment? Did you get certified?
We're certified. I think we got certified last year. So we still have, I think, one more cycle, you know, one more year to go. I think it's 2 years, right?
Did you want to go ahead and finish? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. So I'm resisting the urge to like plant a ton of flowers around the house. And so I'm trying to be mindful of recertification in the future while still being able to put things in the ground and just sort of being smart about it.
Go ahead.
So I sort of have some guidelines I think that might be helpful for you. As far as recertification or certification in general, like wildflowers that are green, moist, and growing are looked upon a lot more favorably than giant clumps of like dead flowers. So part of it is about you and who you are and how you're intending to maintain what you, I mean, I've seen people with beautiful, you know, lush, almost like English style gardens that look fine because of the way they're taking care of them. And I've seen people who have like two plants that look terrible because of the way they're taking care of it. So I think, you know, you can use your good judgment, and certainly if you have, you know, if you want to kind of draw something up and email it to us and have us take a look, or, you know, have a more one-on-one conversation, once you have some specifics, I think that we could help you out with that.
Okay, great. Thank you. And the English gardens you're referring to, I think that's our neighbors up the road. I don't know how she does it, but the gardens are amazing.
Nice.
Abby knows my personal. So, you know, we didn't tell you this at the beginning, but Abby and I not only work for the program, but we live in we're with you. We're part of the program. So Abby lives in Sunshine Canyon and I live in Netherland off Ridge Road. So we're part of you. And she knows my philosophy is I throw wildfire seed on the septic field every spring and till it in. And that's my garden. So, you know, that's anyway, we have more questions. So we're going to move along. And I did just want to mention to everybody who's with us, you will not offend us if you want to leave at some point. If you're like, you know, hey, I know all of this. It's totally fine. We expected this to be kind of a drop in, drop out kind of thing or listen along, kind of like when you're listening to Car Talk on NPR radio, you know, so feel free to work with whatever works for you. So, so we had a follow-up question. I'm going to jump to Greg. Greg, are you with us? And can you go ahead with your question? Oh.
Okay. You got me?
Yep, we do.
Yep.
Okay. I was certified, or my property was certified back, I don't know, in probably 15 or 16. Should I be recertified? You know, we take care of it. We're in a mountain meadow up on Sugarloaf. We whack down the meadow 3 times a year. Keep the weeds out of the barrier at the, you know, between the house and the meadow and whatever. Should we be recertified?
Can I go ahead with this, Abby?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So our recommendation is every 2 years, and it's mainly towards having that second set of eyes look at your property, because as we know, things can change, you know, like little trees will pop up. We call them ladder fields under the house. You know, grasses grow, pine needles accumulate. You know, maybe, you know, you are doing something different. So that's our recommendation. Just an FYI, if you do put in for a recertification and you just call, you don't reapply to the program, it is a $100 fee for the recertification, but it does give you a current certificate that you can use with insurance. So we wanted to let you know that. The second point I would make is you do need to maintain your mitigation. And we do have a blog post about this. It was posted, so you can just go to our website under blog. And I think the title is I Got Certified, Now What? And it kind of reviews, like, here's what you need to do to continue to maintain your mitigation. So.
And to get an appointment for recertification, we call you or?
Just give us a call. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And you would probably talk with me. So I'm going to keep moving along because we've actually got a few questions that have come on. Sandra, go ahead with your question.
Just a follow up, and I think you kind of answered it, but I just wondered if, you know, there are certain succulents that are better than others, or some that you shouldn't do, or just can we do any of them for close to the house?
I guess I'll take this one since I'm like the gardener, I guess, of the two of us. I do a little more than throw the wildflower seed down. I think all succulents are good. And, you know, my, honestly, my sort of guiding light on this is, will it grow? Are the deer eating it? Are the rabbits eating it? And is it staying green? And if you can answer yes to the green and no to like, and to the growing and no to the animals, I think you're golden at that point. So I've had really good luck with all of the sedums, some of those small sort of low grow things like snow in summer. It does well at my house. I'm at like 7,200 feet. So yeah, I think just anything that's low grow and green is pretty good. And it also is nice because it keeps the weeds out, and it's helpful.
And Pat, I'm sorry, I missed you had a follow-up question here. So Pat, go ahead with your question.
Yes, I have. Obviously, we all have driveways, but mine has this kind of like, it's not really asphalt, but it's kind of like a, I don't know, it's something. And it's so weeds grow through it. So how can I kill the weeds without killing my environment? Is there a way to do that? Because Roundup probably isn't a good choice.
I mean, vinegar isn't a bad choice. Vinegar? Vinegar, like a vinegar solution, and you put it in a spray bottle, and You know, you might try like at a hardware store looking for a sort of a higher concentrate vinegar. You know, that's always an issue. I mean, the other thing that I recommend to people sometimes, depending on the location in your driveway, if you can do this, is if you put black plastic down and you can weight it down and leave it there for a few weeks, especially in the summer, that should cook the plants and it'll kill them.
Okay, Guy, you have a question about certification. So go ahead with your question.
Yeah, we've had an assessment done of our property. And then over the last year, we've been working on, I would say, all the mitigation. I think you answered one of my questions as far as on the assessment, you have, you know, what's required, what's recommended and stuff. And so we've been looking through or working on the mitigation steps that have been required. One of the ones that you have for us is removed all marked trees. And so we've removed a lot of the trees, but we have, I think, three trees on the edge of between zone one and zone two that are still there. One of them is in the field of aspens. And so it's not something that at least I feel comfortable with removing and stuff. And so my question is, you know, how strict are you on the removing of marked trees in this? And then how far do we go do we call it, until we call you back? And then, you know, like you said, have a second set of eyes, look at the property and say, yeah, okay, this was good. You know, you need to work on this area or something like that.
So Guy, I don't know who did your assessment, but I can certainly look that up. What I would suggest is, because this is particular to your assessment, that you and I chat. And I can look up who your mitigation specialist is. And if we need to pull them into the conversation, then we would do that. So
it's Matt Tabler.
Tobler. Yeah. Matt is still with us. So yeah, we can absolutely do that. So I'm going to make a note for to follow up with you. And then, like I said, we can pull Matt into the conversation.
I had called you and then was going to have you come out last fall. And then in going through the assessment, we've got woodpecker holes. And so I was like, oh, I got to take care of that. So
Okay.
No, after I get that mitigated, then I was going to have you guys.
Sure. Okay. So I will definitely, like I said, I'm making a note here to follow up and we will do that. We've got more questions rolling in. This is great. So Susan looks like, this is a great question to ask right now. So go ahead with your question.
Okay, so you know, we've only been up in the mountains here a couple of years, and so we were told by a mountain friend that you pretty much mow twice a year. You mow at Memorial Day and you mow at Labor Day, and so I was kind of wondering if that's true, or if it just is sort of one of those wives' tales that's kind of catchy to say and share.
Abby, I know you're laughing and I'm laughing too, because we know that the reality is different.
So I don't know about wives' tales, but I mean, the first point I think I'd want to make about this is that, and I don't know exactly where you live, but you know, we have people in our mountain communities who live everywhere from like 6,000 to 9,000 feet of elevation. So you can't really give a blanket rule like that. I mean, up in Nederland, they might still have snow on the ground on Memorial Day. I know we certainly have just in sunshine more than once. So what I would say, like, here's my personal rule of thumb on mowing the grass is when it starts to brown up is when I usually do my first mow. And I've had that range from like mid-June to sort of early July. Because when it's super green and it's still growing fast, then, you know, first of all, it's not as much of a fire danger. Second of all, it's a lot of work. So who wants to do it too many times? So I do it like that. And then after that, it just varies depending on the year. I would say usually I have to do a second round sometime like August or September. What do you find up in Nederland, Leslie?
Well, so I will tell you, last year, Susan, and I hopefully everyone knows this, that the recommendation is to keep your grasses in zone one trimmed to below 6 inches. That's our, you know, that's even a requirement on pretty much everybody's report if it's higher than that. And we found the grasses were growing so much last year, like right up through June, that we had to weed whip pretty much every week because they were just growing at such a rate that, you know, if they get too tall, then it gets really difficult. And we weed whip. We don't mow because we're on a slope. And that's another thing for all of you. I mean, depending on where you live, it may be mowing, it may be weed whipping. And I would tell you that a good weed whipper is definitely worth the expense. So yeah, it like Abby said, depends on where you live and what they're doing, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, and we're in Sunshine Canyon, actually just off of 86, and maybe 3 miles down from Gold Hill. And so we also weed whack or weed because we have so many rocks in our yard and at a slope that it's, you know, it's, we don't want to go through lawnmowers.
Right.
So maybe a better slogan is when it's brown, mow it down. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Right.
Okay. Or, and also like Leslie said, do it before it gets, I mean, like I, you know, when it, if it's gotten, you know, 6 inches in the very early summer might be a little unrealistic unless you're, I mean, obviously it's the ideal, but some of us maybe don't have time for that. But, you know, once it gets above 2 feet, you're starting to deal with a lot of grass. So I wouldn't let it get too much higher than that for that early first whack.
We actually had a homeowner who called us and they had bought a property that was up in Boulder Heights, I think. And the grasses were 2 feet more and they had dried out and they literally had to get someone to come in with like kind of like a scythe or something because they were so tough and they were so difficult to, so, you know, you definitely don't want to let it get to that for sure. So yeah. Greg had a question. Good question as well. Greg, you want to go ahead with this question?
And I'll also just comment on the previous one. Yes, we at 8,300 feet on Sugarloaf, weed whack our meadow 3 times a year because it just, you know, that seems to be what we need to do to keep it down to about 4 inches.
Yeah.
My question just is what level of participation do you guys have? And, you know, in Boulder County, either by percentage of homes or by, I don't know, how many folks are certified, whatever. Just general question.
Great question. So we had kind of a notable milestone last year in that we did our 2000th assessment. So we probably have, I haven't checked it today, but I know I checked it just the other week. We probably have about 2,100 who have had assessments, are working on mitigation or part of the certified. And you're wondering what percentage that is. I mean, my best guess would be that's about 25 to 30% of homeowners who would be eligible for our program. Of course, the people that are eligible are west of 93, west of 36, you know, in unincorporated. And then what percentage are certified? Well, of the 2,100, we're closing in on 1,000 certified, which I think is amazing. And I want to just, you know, take a moment to applaud all of you for all your hard work. Because like, I talk with a lot of you all the time, and I have amazing conversations, and you guys are doing a great job. And we know there's neighborhoods where the participation rate is like 75-80%, which, it, you know, that collectively makes us all safer when we have that. So keep on keeping on. You're doing a great job. So let's see. Do I have any more questions here? Okay, that looks like the last in the chat. And Susan, did you email me your question? Somebody else emailed me a question. No.
No, okay. But I did not.
I'm going to pull up the other question I had by email. So if anybody has a question right now, you can go ahead and submit that. But I did have another question that came in by email. And I just want to... Okay, this was from Jean. I don't think Jean's with us right now. So this actually is part of a question that was already answered. She asked about they'd had a recertification. So someone came out from Wildfire Partners every 2 years to recertify my property. Will that be done in our current situation? If work needs to be done, how will the certification occur? So I think we've kind of addressed that. Right now, we are not currently able to offer assessments. But that shouldn't stop you from calling or contacting us if you want to set up a recertification, because then we will put you on the list to call as soon as, you know, we get the go ahead that we can go ahead and do that. She had a follow-up question too, so I'm going to just read this. If work needs to be done, will companies be allowed to do the work? Are they considered essential, non-essential businesses? Abby, I think we've decided they are essential, yes?
You know, I think that this is a much, very much of a gray zone at the moment. Like, construction is considered essential, and fire mitigation associated with construction. The Lord knows how these decisions are made, to be perfectly frank, but my suspicion is that as we get closer to the beginning of the wildfire season, that that is definitely going to come under consideration, probably at the state level, and that we'll get some further guidelines that we'll be able to operate within at, you know, in the next few weeks.
Great. I have another question here. Will the Wild Partner Certificate get me a discount on insurance? A great question. One of the things we realized was really important with our program is that it had to be tied to the insurance companies. And so we actually negotiated agreements with certain insurance companies saying the certificate, they couldn't be denied or non-renewed insurance for wildfire mitigation reasons if they were certified through our program. That is still the case, okay? But it doesn't per se get you a discount, but what I do tell people is, because all the insurance companies, to our knowledge, are accepting our certificate, it does allow you to get more competitive quotes from more companies. So it may allow you to get a better rate because you have more options. Hopefully that makes sense. Any follow-up on that? Is everybody good? Okay. Is there a deadline for completing the work to get certified? I think I saw a deadline date on my report. So the deadline date on your report is to use financial assistance for forestry work. So we are partnered with approved forestry contractors, and through a grant with FEMA, you can get assistance and doing your forestry work if you use those approved contractors. So that is the deadline date on your report. There is no deadline to get certified. I'm just wondering, of those of you who are with us today, how many of you are certified already, have been certified? Okay. Oh, good, that's great. Good for you, that's awesome. Oh, I think we just got another question in the chat. So, okay, hold on. This looks like it is from Sandra. Go ahead, Sandra.
Hi, I remember recently getting an email from Wild Bear Center saying you should wait a certain amount of time until it's warmer to rake your leaves because the leaves there are protecting insects and things that make your forest area healthy. So I'm just wondering if that's something I should be thinking about and not raking yet.
Abby, you're the plant person.
Yeah, no, what I would say is, at this point when it still might snow, that probably is a good idea to keep some leaves on the ground, but not in your zone 1A. And even in, within zone 1, I think you could rake confidently. I mean, zone 1A, you really shouldn't have any plants there. So picking leaves up out of that area is super important, and there's no potential to harm anything. It really varies a little bit depending. Do you know what your elevation is where you live, Sandra?
8,200.
Yeah, so you're higher up. So I would, I'd say give it another month or so, probably about raking out under your trees.
Just putting up some tile here.
Someone has their speaker on and we're hearing your conversation with people in your family. So you might want to mute that until you're ready to ask your question. Great. And I just wanted to make sure everyone was clear. When we see zone 1A, we're talking about the first 0 to 5 feet around your house. Everybody I'm sure everybody knew that, but I just wanted to clarify that. Okay, Abby, we had somebody who wanted to know, could you repeat the response to the lilac question? My speaker had an issue and I couldn't hear everything. So if you can give a concise summary of that answer, that would be great.
Yes, I will, I'll keep it short. So Leary, the answer was, sure, you can plant lilacs. Just make sure that you have about 10 feet of clearance between where you're putting your bushes and the edges of any coniferous trees. 10 feet out from your house, ideally, if not further. And then the other thing I was saying is, as those plants grow, try to keep little shoots from growing off the bottom, because that tends to trap the dead leaves that fall from the plant, and it can trap whatever's blowing around, dried grasses and pine needles and stuff. If as the plant gets more mature, you can have something that's more like a stalk that then shrubs up. Then you'll just be able to get in and rake out along the base of the plant. But I think lilacs are beautiful and I see them all over the county. I think they do well here, so.
Yeah, there's a type I think that is meant more to be hardy in the mountains. That's what I, when we looked into this, there's a couple species and one is better for the mountains. So just keep that in mind if you're doing that. Susan, you had a follow-up question on certification.
Sorry, I was mid coffee swallow there.
Okay.
I was just wondering, is this something that the wildfire organization will notify people, like, hey, your certification is up for renewal in 2 months or whatever it is, or is this something that we should keep track of and just put a date on our own calendar?
You have actually raised a really good suggestion. We currently don't keep track and notify you, but this is something I'm making a note of, because it might be useful to like send out a reminder to people. So no, we're not tracking it right now. It would be good, but you know, that's something I can look into, is, you know, maybe running the reports each month and then sending out an email to people saying, hey, you're at your 2 years, you might want to, you know, think about setting up a recertification. So thanks for that idea. That's great. Well, Greg, you had a question about the fire ban. So go ahead, Greg.
Well, obviously, fire bans in the county. Oh,
Greg, we're not hearing you.
Do you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I think everyone can, but maybe not Leslie.
Okay.
Is it my connection?
Yes. I think it's you, yeah.
Go ahead, Abby.
Yeah, Greg, go ahead with your question.
Okay. What's the chance of the sheriff instituting, you know, seasonal fire bans on a regular annual basis? Obviously, fire bans in the mountains west of Boulder would be very helpful for fire mitigation.
So that's a fantastic question, and I'm not sure that I am 100% authoritative on this, but my understanding is that, you know, bureaucracy has its sort of like protocols, and that the sheriff's department has, there are certain things that have to fall into place before they're able to instigate a fire ban or a shooting ban or whatever it is.
That's my understanding too.
Yeah. So in this particular case, they were able to override the fact that they didn't actually meet any of the seasonal or moisture content type of qualifications because of the emergency directives to do with the COVID-19. So the reason that they're able to initiate the current fire ban is because of the limited capacity of first responders that we have, and trying to keep people's personal protective equipment intact. So that's the reason that they put that into effect at the moment. And it's sort of parallel with those guidelines about not recreating and not going out like mountain climbing and doing things that might require a rescue, because then that uses up personal protective equipment.
So maybe the question should be, what would be, do you have any idea what would be necessary to change those parameters so we do get a seasonal, campfire and smoking band?
Yeah, I'm back. I just want to jump in on this real quick. So that is actually decided on kind of a state level. So it's not something that the county could just arbitrarily like change. So
you'd have to, or somebody would have to work on that at the state level then.
Yeah. This is bigger than Boulder County in terms of deciding when the parameters that is.
Well, it's truthfully also bigger than Boulder County. I mean,
yes.
You know, if we could get people to, respect or not have campfires and whatever, I think we'd probably have. Do we know what percentage of our wildfires are human caused versus natural caused?
Abby, do you know?
I think off the top of my head, the wildfires themselves, I think, are largely naturally caused. But the ones that turn into extreme wildfire are mostly human caused. And the reason for that is that the naturally caused ones are often lightning strikes, which are happening in conjunction with weather that helps suppress them pretty much immediately, versus the ones that really get out of control are the ones that happen during extreme wind and heat conditions, and that's not the time when lightning tends to strike. So short answer.
You know, just one data point, it would appear to me that most of the bad ones in Boulder or in Boulder County are caused by humans.
I think that's true. I haven't looked up all the percentages, but I think you're right that more of them are caused by the ones that, if you think back our fire history, like Black Tiger and Four Mile Canyon, and if you in the last 20, 30 years, I think you're right that they were mostly human caused. So I have a question. Susan's dropping off. Thank you for participating, Susan. It was really nice to see you in person too.
Thanks everybody. This was really great. Susan.
Yeah. We have another question. Someone said, are you going to offer the slash pickup program this year? Abby.
I'm happy to speak to that. The short answer is no, we're not doing slash pickup, but we will be doing a chipping program this year, like sponsored by Wildfire Partners. So we're well on our way to organizing it. Unfortunately, we don't really have our schedule ready to finalize at the moment, just because we don't really know when we're going to be able to get started on it. But it will be a curbside pickup program organized by neighborhoods. So we'll sort of split the county up into 10 neighborhoods, and over the course of 10 weeks, we'll drive by and just pick up slash that's going to be staged along the roadways, and there'll be more details coming soon. Do you have anything, Leslie?
I think what we've talked about is that we're going to set it up through our website so that you could, like, the zones will appear on a map, and then you can click on, like, you can put in your address and see which zone you're in and see when your pickup's going to be. And then you would register at that point. You would be like, okay, and it's free to our Wildfire Partners participating homeowners. And when we say participating, that means you have to have had an assessment at some point in our program. So that's what we're thinking. But again, because we're kind of on hold a little bit with everything going on, dates aren't finalized. But we will email everyone when we finalize that. So again, and post it on our social media pages. So we want to let you know, we'll communicate that to you. So I am just seeing if there are other questions here.
If there aren't, I'm going to, I could geek out a little more with Greg about what starts fires. But is there somebody else waiting to ask a question, Leslie?
I'm just looking at the email here to see if there was an item about 1/8-inch screenings on vents. They said they were having trouble finding that. So do you want to address that, Abby?
Well, I mean, you're as qualified as me, but Leslie and I did a little afternoon trip to the hardware store together, because we realized that sometimes we were saying 1/8-inch screening and people were like, I can't find that at the hardware store. So we went to the hardware store and we asked them do you have eighth inch screening? And they're like, oh, you mean hardware cloth. And that's what they call it. So try asking for hardware cloth. Basically, if you want to describe it, it's a metal screening that has no larger than eighth inch holes.
And just an update on, I'm sure, hopefully you all know this, but hardware stores are considered essential services. So they are all open right now. And all of them seem to be doing curbside pickup. Some are doing delivery. So I know McGuckin's has said they're doing curbside pickup. So you can actually order online, you can call and then pick it up. Ace, I think, up here in Netherlands is doing that. So it appears, you know, all the hardware stores are making accommodations. You can order online and have it shipped to your house. I know we did that with Home Depot. We had something shipped to the house. So, you know, if you do need supplies, that would be our recommendation to comply with what's going on, you know, just order and pick up or order and have it sent to your house. So, somebody, Sandra asked about 8-inch. It's 1/8 inch, 1/8 inch, not 8-inch. and Abby, do you want to explain why it needs to be 1/8 inch and not 1/4 inch, or, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and Sandra, I did type that in for you too, hardware cloth, just because it's not very intuitive to me anyway to call something metal cloth, but 1/8 inch is chosen because of the fire science showing that that is the size that is small enough to prevent embers from passing through the screening. And so it's like the perfect size to use if you're screening like vents, or you're blocking up that bird hole that for some reason you just can't get the bird to stop pecking at and you want to put some metal in there or something. In fact, you know, I was reading some of the fire science coming out of Australia after these, or sort of even during the mm-hmm. most recent hellacious fire season that they had this past winter of ours. And they were finding that the gaps could even be slightly smaller. I mean, they used millimeters. And when I translated it, it was a little bit less than 1/8 inch even.
And you know, the other interesting thing about the reading about the Australia fires, which made me think of Abby and I both watched, if you haven't watched it, it's excellent. There was a documentary done by PBS on the fire in California, the Paradise Fire. And it's kind of emotional, but it's also just very eye-opening about, you know, what behavior with wildfires is like now compared to what it was 20 years ago. But what they said in both those events, both Australia, was that embers were flying like up to 15 miles ahead of the fire front. So that's why we keep talking about, you know, hardening your home and you know, protecting it from embers, is because that's how much of a danger they can be, is that they can spot fire that far ahead of a fire. And so, you know, it's really kind of eye-opening to think about that. Like, you know, there couldn't be fire anywhere near your house, but your home could still ignite from these ember showers. So,
Well, that kind of brings me back to what Greg was talking about. And I don't know, I'll keep this brief because I know we're kind of wrapping up. But, you know, they have actually started, like fire scientists have started classifying these fires as either fuel driven, which is the fires that they are having earlier in the summer that are lightning strikes that ignite fuel. Or now they have this category called wind driven fires. And those are how they're describing the fires they're having more into the fall when it's heat and wind. And again, like Leslie was saying, I mean, I don't know if in the US we've had fires, embers that have blown quite as far as 15 miles, but they're surely blowing for many, many miles ahead of the fire front. So I just found that very interesting.
Yeah. So we're at the point where we would be wrapping up, but we want to give those of you who are still with us, do you have any final questions, thoughts, concerns that you want to share before we wrap this up? And did you find this helpful? Yay. Because we're thinking maybe we should do it again. Yay, there's the thumbs up. Yeah, excellent. Okay.
Hey, thanks for everybody. It's super fun for us to like have people join us, and this was our first time, so hopefully it wasn't too too herky-jerky. I think that it went pretty well. All as technology goes, there's always going to be a little lump and a bump here and there.
And what I am appreciating is seeing all of you, because normally I don't get to see you all in person. I get to hear your voices on the phone and get your emails, but it's really nice to make that personal connection. FYI, we are hoping that, you know, if things eventually calm down, that we want to have some in-person events as well. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. You know, hopefully later in the summer, we can actually have some events that if one of us stop by and talk with us in person, you can do that. But we may continue doing these virtual events because it's nice to not have to, you know, leave your home, right?
Well, yeah, virtual events are very convenient because, so I would recommend them even when we can leave our home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Good suggestion.
Abby and I were thinking we could become the click and clack of wildfire mitigation. So we were going to be flame and ember. So,
Perfect.
Yeah. We'll just have to become a little bit more funny when we have a little more.
Well, we have to get our hats because we have like little fire flame hats that are at our office that we can't get to right now, but maybe in the future we'll be wearing those.
Well, thank you very much. And I guess what I've learned is I need to call in to make an appointment for a follow-up assessment sometime.
Yeah, absolutely, awesome. Greg. And so I'm still manning the phone lines. I don't always have them directly forwarded to my home, but if you do get the voicemail, I get it immediately in my email. So if you do get that, leave the message and I'll give you a call back right away. But
And actually for me, it'd probably be middle, end of May. I'm stuck at my winter home in Southern California. And so I'm not on Sugarloaf right now. Although
This is another reason virtual is good, right? For second homeowners, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is perfect. Matter of fact, I'm a member.